All right, this is Andrew again. I'm sitting here on the expo floor of Ignite 2016 conference in Atlanta, Georgia. Sitting here, this is one of our Ignite Wire episodes, episode number 153, and I'm sitting here with Jeremy Thake. Jeremy, how are you doing today?
Good, man. Day two, nearly over and done with. Three sessions in, and I'm ready for a pint, actually.
Feels like you've been here a week, and we've only been here for like 2 days. Isn't it brutal?
I made the mistake of buying new shoes last week, and they aren't the comfiest, and this place is enormous. I'm not wearing any step counters or anything, but I'm pretty much killing it every day.
You should. Hey, I'm sitting here looking at the shoes, man. You shouldn't have put your heels on today. You should have go a little bit of flats. It's a little bit easier. Right? So, hey, I wanted to... For our listeners who don't know who you are, right, you know, introduce yourself. Who are you? Twitter, blog, all that stuff. Tell us what you're doing and everything these days.
Sure. So Jeremy Thake, jeremythake.com, at jthake on Twitter, so T-H-A-K-E. Born in England, lived in Australia for 10 years, did New York for a bit, moved to Microsoft nearly 3 years ago now. Yeah, it's gone quick, right?
I would never have guessed it would have been 3 years, but yeah I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, and so I've been in the SharePoint office space for a long, long time. Pretty much started my career in 2003. Was reading your books on WCM in 2007 when I was working with the government over there. And you know, eventually ended up owning kind of Office 365 development with Rob Howard's team, and prior to that when Chris Johnson was running it. And so kept me busy. But in April, I decided that it was time for a bit of a shift and moved over to Azure Developer Marketing. So it's been a really great ride. It's been interesting. It's some of it's similar to what I was doing in Office. Some of the dynamics of engineering and marketing and the politics is the same. But man, that train is moving fast. And the way they're shipping is pretty incredible. So it's been great to just see... Like working on another platform, like SharePoint was a platform, but this thing is just more broader platform, I think.
Sure. So how different do you see like between working in Azure, working in 365? Like how are the, in terms of the engineering side, are they really that different of like of groups where they're run, things are run differently? Or is it just, you know, it's just more like I would from the outside, it seems to me that Azure is more developer focused, much more engineering focused and everything. Azure, where Office 365 is a little more like business focused, business features and stuff. Where it's really Azure's trying to empower the developers and the people who are building and hosting applications.
Yeah, I think one of the big reasons I moved was the developer angle of Office and SharePoint, where I used to be, was a percentage. And, you know, like our team was very small, but we got a lot done. And a lot of people were like, how are you doing all that with such a small team? But I think with Azure, it's, you know, almost 100% developer focused. Like when you look at Service Fabric and App Service and Azure Container Services and Functions and things, like that's a pro dev thing. And I think the biggest change that or perception that I've seen is the most different from Office SharePoint engineering is how in tune the program managers are with the outside world. In the sense, and it's a lot to do with how Scott Guthrie runs the team. He makes sure that they're all here. Like we have six engineers on a table booth. Just purely an Azure App Service, and they're the PMs. They're the guys that are the guy, you know, working out the roadmap, working with the, you know, the developers in engineering in the same building in 44. And so, you know, they all have their own blogs. They've all got Twitter handles. They're engaging. They're jumping on User Voice. They're jumping in the forums. I just feel like they're a little bit more engaged than what I'm used to in the other worlds.
Sure.
And I think maybe that's because the Office guys were a little bit more internalized in terms of their developer audience. It was often a product group halfway down the hallway that was trying to build an add-in for Outlook and working with partners directly rather than the kind of overarching community.
I gotcha. It's interesting. That's kind of the perception from the outside too, where, I mean, you've got, like you said, that, you know, Office has got the developer side of Office is not the forefront. That's not the primary piece of it, but it is an audience they want to speak to, whereas Azure, 100%. So what are you doing over in Azure? What you said you're over on the marketing side on like the app service stuff, but like what things are you covering?
Yeah, so my role, there's product managers in general that own the marketing message for various different services in Azure. I think where I'm a little bit different in my team is that I'm more technical. Like there's not many of us that can code and kind of deploy and stuff. And so I kind of challenge the engineering teams quite a lot and question the PMs have an opinion of how they should be messaging it. And we've been working really close to make sure that the story isn't just about their service in Azure, and it ties into everything else that's going on in Azure as well.
Gotcha. So not just a bunch of, you know, silos of building blocks and everything, right, but how do things fit together?
So a lot of it's kind of massaging what the product program managers want out of their service, but making sure it fits with the overall story of Azure so that when a a customer comes in and goes, I want to build on top of the application platform story of Azure, you know, what's out there, we're really cohesive and coherent there. And I specifically own Azure App Service and Azure Functions. So App Functions is fairly new. That got launched in preview in March at Build. So I obviously joined straight after it got launched in preview. And then Azure App Service has been around for a few years now. It kind of superseded cloud services, which was the original PaaS platform on Azure. And App Services, the best way I like to explain it is it's really on-rails web apps as their core thing that we see the most use out of it. And it just really simplifies the workflow of getting a web application into the cloud, Visual Studio, right-click, publish, or you know, you're in, continuous deployment from Visual Studio Team Services and GitHub and Bitbucket and all, you know, all those different CD tools. But then it integrates with things like Visual Studio Web Tests, and it integrates with Azure Active Directory, like almost like one click, I want auth on this whole web app now, and Application Insights. And so we're truly trying to make it really easy for a web developer to get something out there in the wild as quickly as possible. And then the key part is when that web application is successful, it automatically scales for you. You can like pay for extra premium plans. It gives you even more scale and deployment slots to allow you to have like staging and dev and test in there. And it handles all the DNS changes and load balancing for you.
Yeah, that's we use that to host our site. Actually, we use I've got Orchard open source CMS, and I've got it running as a multi-tenant instance, hosting my blog, the podcast, and another couple other sites. And I went recently and I turned on the whole like auto scale bit as well, because I'd see every once in a while spikes go up and the site would go unresponsive. And it's crazy. You set those email alerts and you wake up in the morning and all you see that, you know, it spun up from one instance up to three instances and then back down to two and then back down to one, all in the course of like 45 minutes to handle load. And you're only paying for that fraction of that time it's running. It's really slick and able to, I was able to actually take the size of the machine or the service that I was using and drop it down to almost one of the basic ones that we have that lets you do still do deployment slots, still lets you do custom domains, but just say, hey, look, when you need more, use more. The majority of the time, I don't. I mean, it's, most of the content is all syndicated out, so it's not like I have a lot of hits coming to my site anyway, but it really lets me save a lot on the hosting side. I saw that even stuff that, we'll talk a little bit about Azure Functions, well, I'll hold that for just a bit here. But so one of the things, you know, you talked about that you're that you own is the Azure Functions. That really that it goes along with this new mantra or this new idea of serverless style computing. So, in your words, how would you describe serverless to someone?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously messaging it right now, and since the preview, we've been like trying to see what the competitors are doing in this space and how we want to message. And we don't want to be so far away from how AWS and Google and IBM with Bluemix, how they message what's going on. But there are some intricacies in the way that we've implemented Azure Functions that is a little bit different from how AWS Lambda talk to this and how, you know, Google Functions talk to this type of stuff as well. Essentially, serverless is what it says on the tin. Like you, as a service that you burn purchase inside of Azure or, you know, get as a free trial, you don't have any idea about the servers underneath. It's totally abstracted from you. Now, platform as a service in general should be that. You know, you have IaaS, which is really about VMs. Platform as a service is, you know, let's give you buttons, config, slidey sliders to do scale. But you still have this notion of service. So even app service, like when I buy a plan, like you just mentioned, you have this notion of how many instances you can run on a slidey scale. So I don't necessarily see that as being serverless. Azure Functions is truly serverless. There's nowhere where you get any visibility in the VMs that are running. There's no notion of how many instances you're firing. You basically just create a function. It can be triggered via HTTP, it can be triggered via a webhook, or it can be triggered by a binding to either one of our first-party services, like there's a file that landed in Azure Storage, or maybe an item that got dropped into a queue, or even things like I've put a file in Box or Dropbox or Google Documents or OneDrive, and then that function executes the code, and it goes to another binding maybe as an output, or maybe it just calls something else. And so that can just run thousands and thousands of functions without you even knowing like how many servers you're running. And the way we bill it is a dynamic plan, which allows you to say, look, we'll give you the first million executions for free, and then every execution after that, your meter will start spinning. And then there's another meter which basically measures the duration of the function execution and the memory use, and that's another meter that spins.
Gotcha.
So the reason we do that is that we're trying to encourage that your function is a very single finite execution of something.
Yeah.
So you shouldn't be doing like 1,000 lines of code calling off to a bunch of different services.
Yeah.
What you would do is your function would kind of trigger, it would do something, and then maybe pop onto a queue, and then another function would grab off the queue and do something and pop back to the queue.
So it's doing like kind of like microservice style architecture, where you just like a single responsibility, you just do just do one thing, and everything communicates over with messages, and because you can have the messages be the trigger to fire off another function, then let that be the flow, let that be the glue that holds it all together, very decoupled and everything.
Yeah, and so that's the notion of serverless. Now, the other part of serverless, which doesn't really get tangled so well into the messaging, is just how quickly you can build these things. As an example for kind of the SharePoint people that kind of watch this because you're following and so forth, you know, they announced webhooks on the Microsoft Graph for SharePoint this week, and I did a blog post back in April when we announced webhooks for Outlook on Microsoft Graph, where essentially that webhook needs to call something. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, and the way that PMP work right now in the SharePoint sphere, like Vase's team, you know, they'll host a web API in .NET on a web app in app service and publish that from Visual Studio. Now, you're paying for an app service plan there, and you're paying for something to be warm all the time to be able to call that. Mm. What you can do instead is say, I'm going to create a function which is triggered via a webhook, and then essentially in the Microsoft Graph, register your function URL with that webhook. And then you're off away to the races, and you can do whatever you need to do in that execution, and that function goes away. And the speed to do that is insane. If you go to functions.azure.com right now and click on the try button, we'll give you an hour free without signing in at all and paying for anything. You can use a Google account, a Facebook account, or just your consumer Microsoft account, and you'll be able to play and build these things. What we have coming in time for Connect, which is in November, where we have a bit more of announcements around functions, is a challenge. So we're going to have a bunch of challenge code. There's going to be some really cool things, some prizes. And basically, in doing all the challenges, you'll learn how to do functions, how to do bindings, and doing to storage queues and different bits and pieces. So I've been working on that for a few months now, and it's really exciting. But what's been amazing with the piling of it is just how amazed people are on the fact that you're just in with function writing code. You're not having to worry about any of the plumbing, deployment, and so forth. Like, you can just spike your code right there and then.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is, because the function's runtime is currently running on Azure App Service, you get all the bits for free that App Service had. So you get continuous deployment. I can go build my function locally in Visual Studio and commit the code up to GitHub or Visual Studio Online, and it'll automatically deploy those functions into your function app. And that way you can like run all those things through your usual kind of the continuous deployment that you'd be familiar with in a team.
Yeah, that's really good. We're using that for the podcast as well, because we have it set up to where every time we have a new log file gets written to the table store or to the blob storage where we put all of our MP3s. We take that file, we move it over somewhere else, do a little bit of work with it, open it up, import it into SQL, do a bunch of reverse geocoding lookup on it, and it's a series of a couple different functions that trigger each thing off.
Yeah.
We use that to track all of our analytics and our stats for the podcast. So it's a little bit of a homegrown thing, but you know, going back to what you talked about with the way that you charge it, the way you do the meters, there was a blog post, I'm sure you've seen Troy Hunt's blog post from this past week, where he was using functions to... The short story is his site was getting slammed with a bunch of API calls by people who were abusing his an API that he has for the Have I Been Pawned site. And he also uses Cloudflare to kind of back all of this stuff. And so they will cache all the requests that go in and be able to... They won't reissue the same request over and over. And so he was getting a ton of crawls, ton of hits and everything from these bad IPs. He was tracking, figuring out what IPs were bad, and set them up once his application would actually put an IP address in a queue. He would then have a function kick off, submit that IP address to the Cloudflare's. I think it's Cloudflare.
Yeah, Cloudflare.
He's using Cloudflare to then list it as a bad IP to block that IP, and to, then the traffic request would go down, or the traffic to his site would actually go down. The cache request would go way up. And it was really interesting to see that, you know, he's doing this, mentioned how many times he was doing it, how much time it's actually saving him. He was spending a lot more on bandwidth from all the requests that he was doing from his API on his site on the app service. But by implementing this with Azure Functions and to be able to take that off, he's not only going through and not going to pay for anything with App Service or with Azure Functions, because he's not going over that threshold of the billion requests a month.
Right.
But he's also been able to reduce his cost on the website hosting, because now he doesn't have nearly as much requests that are going through and all the bandwidth that's going out from the site. It just shows you can do a lot of stuff with this.
Yeah, and that was a really neat scenario, this notion of, you know, it was zero cost to him because he was underneath the million requests.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a lot of scenarios like that, and we're starting to see that happening with our customer base where they're seeing things that maybe traditionally they would have done as a web job, a timer job running, because you can set a timer job to kind of wake up based on a cron string. So I could say every minute, wake up and do something. So I know that's how CJ configured that function thing, was that it would wake up, grab the files and move on.
Right.
We're seeing it for data cleansing. Like I was talking to John White, who's very strong in Power BI.
Yeah.
He's doing a ton of stuff where he wakes up, grabs a bunch of rows out of a SQL table and doing some kind of cleansing on it and storing it back into another table. And then Power BI is then using that to do all its data processing. There's a bunch of work the Power BI team have been doing that with a campaign manager solution, which you can go to their blog and have a look at. And it's just amazing, like, the power that it has, and it's a very, very cheap solution. Even when you go over the million,
still
because
really cheap.
The pricing is super, super cheap.
Yeah.
But it's streamlined for those types of scenarios.
Yeah.
But it's not all about, I mean, that's one bucket of scenarios that we're seeing. Well, another really common scenario we're seeing, and we've just shipped a sample on this that Todd Baginski actually had a hand in helping to build, where we built a hero demo for a Contoso Insurance, where the mobile app takes a photo of the crash, takes a photo of the driving license, takes a photo of the actual person, probably terrified they've just crashed their car. And the mobile app, all the mobile app does is it calls the Azure Storage API directly and stores the files. Now, Azure Functions trigger on those storage locations, and the Azure Function calls the cognitive service APIs and then does like facial recognition to see whether that person's scared or whether they're like, you know, bleep, that brick, you know. And then it does like text recognition on the number plate to get the number plate and store it into the database. Ah. And all those things are happening on the server side on the mobile back end.
Right.
And so there's scenarios like that where typically, traditionally, you may have done all that business logic in your mobile app itself and then shot off all that data back over the wire, back to the cloud repository. Whereas now we're kind of saying, no, let's distribute that stuff back in the cloud and let the mobile app be a lot lighter in terms of what's going on.
You just want to, the mobile app just wants to go just to do the data collection and just to do viewing into some of the stuff. You don't want it in the interaction. It doesn't need to do all the heavy lifting and all the work there.
Right. And then another really cool scenario we're seeing is on the side that we can enable cores with Azure Functions as well. And so what we're seeing is a lot of like Angular 2 applications where rather than having a web server be the back end for the Angular application, all the JavaScript files can live in CDNs or somewhere publicly, but they'll call back into functions over cores and all the business logic's done in a function. And so again, like if your website's not that heavy on server side, it's going to be super cheap to run a web application where it's totally serverless, just using functions for all the HTTP calls for various different things that are kind of CRUD operations that are going back into maybe a .DB or even a SQL database. And so we're seeing a lot of architects now kind of rethinking what they're doing and going, actually, this is going to be super cheap to run this thing just with a bunch of functions and a website, you know, a bunch of web files running that are accessed on a super cheap app service plan and scale it that way.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's really cool that you can, of everything that you can do with this. Like, it really opens up a lot of solutions that you can do. Let's go. Where do you see people going with this? Where are they, like, down the road? Like, what do you see, like, future? What can people kind of expect from this stuff? And I know you can't do any kind of announcements or anything like that. But
I think the biggest one I've had this week, and I've seen it since I started, because obviously, you know, I've designed some big applications in my time when I was working with the Government of Australia, was like, well, hang on. Describing that last scenario where you've got maybe like 10 functions on a website, the reality is you're going to have a ton of functions to do a lot of the features inside of a full enterprise solution. And so I think where the future is going to go is how we visually represent that solution. So how do I know as a brand new developer on a project how all those functions are connected to my end user interfaces and how I monitor them and group them and so forth. So there's a lot of work we're doing to kind of help with the visualization of functions, which will be a little bit further down the track, but I think that's definitely one of the nuts we're going to have to, you know, crack open to make us really compete with the rest of the guys. I do feel like we're in a very strong position from a developer experience being integrated with Visual Studio and integrated with the, you know, very easy web browser experience.
Yeah, portal's really easy. It's really easy to work with them in the portal.
Yeah, and especially now we have that try experience where you don't even need to go into the Azure portal to do it. I feel like, you know, this is going to get some legs on it. I think what's going to be interesting is we're working with some customers at the moment, and much like we talk about the mobile app and the web app, There's a really cool scenario we're working on right now where almost like this IoT aspect where device scanners, where it's going to scan a barcode and the device is just calling an Azure function. The function is doing all the information about a barcode and then returning the JSON packet straight back to the device scanner. So you can imagine the cost savings there.
Oh, yeah.
If you know, you've got a big store that may be distributed around America and they're all doing this barcode scanning and you can scale up by just throwing everything at Azure function instead of having to worry about running a website and scaling it for APIs. And so then what that means is obviously then, you know, we've got to have a good story with APIM on top. And so you'll see us moving in that direction a little bit too in terms of how we can manage those functions. And you can already secure them because, again, it's built on app service. So I can click, like one click, and have all those functions locked behind Azure AD or locked behind Microsoft account straight away. And so there's some really cool scenarios. And you know, the more kind of interest we're getting as we get the DX field, which are the ones that go talk to all our partners, it's been super cool to kind of have the partners get on calls with us and explain what they're trying to do and being like, wow, that's pretty amazing, you know?
It's always cool when you put one of those tools in people's hands and like, yeah. You know, how are you going to use it? We envision all these things and then it's like, you see what they're doing and it just kind of blows your mind. It's just stuff you didn't think of.
Right, and the program manager's like, whoa, we never thought that would be used like that, but actually that's really cool. And so there's some really, really nice stuff coming. And I would just say keep an eye on Connect, which is in November. It's the online event that has a smaller pocket of in-person people in November. But yeah, I'm really jazzed for it. It's been a really exciting project to work on, and there's serverless conferences going on around the world now. We're attending the one in London in October, and you know they're all there: AWS and Google and IBM and that. And I think it's interesting because everyone's taken a slightly different approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
We open source the entire runtime, so you go to GitHub, you can see everything that's going on. We're in the open. The PMs are in there responding to issues that have been going on, and you can see all the commits going through and how we're using that in the Surface. And then amazingly, we used Angular 2 when it was in preview from the outset, which was a huge decision for engineering to make, but it's worked out. Like, the user interface is beautiful. Like, when you use it, it's just a really slick thing to use. And so that we've been super impressed with kind of like, I guess, the innovation that the engineering team went about building this, knowing that we may be in a little bit behind the times in terms of what was already out there in the field, but leveraging the WebJobs SDK that we'd had for a long, long time and kind of like stepping up from that to look at how we were going to tackle functions and how we were going to make it truly, truly serverless and truly scale.
Awesome. Well, that's really cool, man. It's good to hear all that stuff. Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with before we wrap up here?
Yeah, so the easiest place to go is functions.azure.com. That'll be the product page. Bit of marketing blurb, take a read, spend hours on that stuff. We'll have some case studies on there very shortly, but there's a big try button. Click that button. You'll be able to pick either to trigger from a webhook, trigger from a timer, trigger from a data source. Just click go. It'll ask you to log in with Microsoft account, Facebook account, or Google account, and then you'll be in the editor straight away and just start writing your code. And it's a really good way of just exploring what's going on. And also on that functions.azure.com, there's a bunch of samples now that you can download. And just to get an idea about what are some of the things you can do, some of the scenarios I've talked about today, and just kind of get those running and watch those going through.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks a lot for the time, man. And how can people learn more about it? Functions.azure.com, but how can they find out more about you and all that?
Yeah, so follow at Azure is the Twitter handle for everything we do with Azure. Hashtag Azure Functions and hashtag Azure App Service. And then me is at JThake, so just JThake. And jeremythake.com is my blog, although I've been pretty slow on that since I joined this team because I've been slammed. But I'm hoping to get a little bit of breathing room after Connect to start going and writing some more code on some sample ideas I've got in my head to kind of really show off what we can do with functions.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it.
No, you're welcome. I love the show, although sometimes I do get sick of my ex-boss being on the show, and I'm like, he left for a reason. I still have to hear his voice when I commute to work in the mornings.
Referring to CJ, right?
Of course, CJ, yes.
All good. Thanks a lot, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
Cheers, man.